did when I worked there. It's something that was off the books, so to speak. And the people that we often worked with had these problems. This is a picture of a typical day in Port Arthur, Texas. Port Arthur is going to be the focus of this because I know the most about it, but I'm going to, at the end, talk about how you might get involved with other communities because it's sort of, it's an involvement thing. It's very important.
Okay,
what is EJ? This is based on what President Clinton signed in 1994. It was an executive order, 12898, executive orders, of course, are just nice ideas. They're not laws. And his nice idea was that nobody should get stuck with the outcomes of industrial society, and other people don't get stuck with any of it. And he wanted this to be part of municipal, commercial, and governmental policy. Now, we know that that's problematic. Okay, this is where it started. This is in 1982 in North Carolina, Afton, North Carolina, and Warren County, when they decided, the state decided they wanted to put a PCB dump in an African-American community because it was the easiest. Well, they pick people who can't lawyer up. If you can lawyer up, you'll never have this problem. And it didn't work, however. And the civil rights movement, the tactics and the strategies of the civil rights movement segued perfectly into environmental justice, and that's what they did. Oh, that's okay. That's all right. These are some of the events behind putting together the movement that we call environmental justice. And the thing I just referred to, the People of Color Environmental Leadership Conference in D.C. in 91, the executive order. And this is a, and I'll give you this information later if you want. If you want to go to the Duke University archive, you can get a really good film on that, how it all came together. And then these are some publications that were early stage publications. Can you guys see that over there?
No.
No? Okay. How about I just sit down, huh?
Yeah.
I'll just sit right here. Yeah, no problem. Okay. These are good books. If you're interested in learning about the Houston area, Robert Bullard's Dumping in Dixie was written about the Fifth Ward. And he's teaching again at TSU, and you could even go over and talk to him. He's a very accessible guy. But he was one of the founders of this movement. Oopsie. All right, what are we doing here? All right, environmental justice happens where all these things come together. Everything up on that screen is in some way contingent upon or bears upon the whole idea of justice in the environment. And it starts with the allegedly value-free science and goes all the way down to the very valued politics. And you put all that together, and this is what you're dealing with. Okay. Sorry, I don't understand my machine here because it's not mine. These are some of the basic demographics in West Port Arthur. West Port Arthur is the western section of the town. It's right next to a Motiva refinery, which is at this point the largest one in Texas. Wasn't when I put together these statistics. Notice that looking at distribution of age, population age, from 20 to 34 is very scant. And that's because, according to Hilton Kelly that I work with over there, a lot of those, mostly men, are in jail. And this is part of the school-to-prison pipeline. He's been working to deal with this for a long time. Okay. Okay, you can see all those white things on the edge. Those are all petrochemical facilities. They ring the town. I'll show you another thing. It's an aerial view, which is of West Port Arthur proper. But there's higher than normal rates of cancer and respiratory problems, as you might assume. There's also lots of extreme events on the fence line, which means explosions, fires, spills. This stuff happens quite frequently. Notice how residential subdivisions relate to where the refineries are. They're kissing one another, basically. This is the west side. The air is kind of warm, you know, bears that out. If you take a whiff, you'll notice there's a lot of things in it. Okay. Michelle Motiva puts out 275,000 barrels per day, but is now at 600 plus. And that's because of the Keystone XL pipeline. A lot of that stuff is coming into Port Arthur and Houston. So they upgraded to be able to handle it. And Total is a French company, and Valero, of course, is the homegrown Texas company. And these are just three of them. There's a whole lot of others. I just picked out three large ones. Huntsman has a big facility there making chemicals. Okay. This is what you might find in a sample of air. Now, benzene and 1,3-butadiene are carcinogenic, and they've been labeled that way by the EPA. Styrene, ethylene, propylene, these are highly reactive, volatile compounds that don't stay there very long, but they combine with nitrogen oxide and heat and humidity to make ground-level ozone. So they have a lot of ozone over there, too. And that, of course, contributes to respiratory problems. Then there's lead, mercury, and diesel particulates. And, of course, hydrogen sulfide is a neurotoxin. I'm sorry, I can't make that not happen. I touched the machine. I don't know. I guess I'm touching it wrong. This is another thing which I'm not going to explain because I don't fully understand it myself scientifically. But epigenetics is stuff that happens to your genes from the environment. Some of it's hereditary and some of it's not. But epigenetic reprogramming happens in the presence of some of that stuff I just showed you is in the air. And basically changes the way your own personal genome unfolds. And it's not good. That's all I can say about it. Okay. And now this is something else a community like this might have to deal with. There's an industrial strength incinerator in Port Arthur. They send all kinds of incredibly toxic stuff over there to be incinerated. This is VX nerve toxin that came in 2007. It had been quote-unquote denatured on site at a federal munitions dump, and they had to find a place to put it and destroy it quickly because they were behind schedule with the International Convention on Chemical Weapons. So they sent it to Port Arthur without telling anybody except the folks that needed to know. And once again, that kind of confirms a pattern of marginalization you see in all these communities where things are going on and there's no transparency. They were able to slow that down and get the government to talk to them, but they had to demonstrate right in front of the facility and shut the highway. It was a very tense situation. And worrying that Port Arthur would become a preferred destination for that kind of garbage, Mr. Hilton Kelly of CEDA, that's Community in Power and Development Association, made a really concerted stand at a hearing that the EPA was required to have, where the company asked to bring PCBs from Mexico to the United States, which is a variance on the Environmental Protection Act. These are things you can't bring into the country because they own the company that made them in Mexico and they own the company that would incinerate them in Port Arthur. And this was a cost-saving thing for them. They did not get their variance because of this guy's work. This is an oil spill that also happened over there in 2010. This oil was on its way to Beaumont, to the Exxon facility there, which is a 350,000 barrel per day operation. That connects the Sabine Neches Waterway. They had to evacuate 28 blocks of Port Arthur. A lot of people had sulfur compound fume sickness. And since 348,000 barrels per day in Beaumont, that's where it was going. 462,000 gallons actually went into the waterway. Now, we had something like that happen in Galveston in 2014 when there was a collision near, I guess it was close to Texas City, of a tanker and a barge, and they dropped about 200,000 gallons of bunker fuel into the bay. And we were actually testing at the time for another reason, and we saw a huge uptick of that kind of hydrocarbon associated with that fuel in the tissue of fish we were taking out of the bay. So it was there for a while. I mean, it doesn't stay there permanently, but it was there for a while. Okay, cumulative risk is another thing an EJ community will have to contend with. And basically, risk is a layered cake of bad things. And I'm going to go down to the bottom for that. I think that's the best definition. And it's the one that communities came up with themselves. A collection of individual stressors that occur simultaneously, interact, and ultimately multiply in effect. Like you live in a community where you don't have good access to health care, you don't have good food, you don't have good infrastructure, you don't have a healthy economy, you don't have good schooling, and then you have all these other things in the air. It all interacts and multiplies. It's not just one thing, then another thing. It's one thing and then times two or times three. So the situation can be pretty bad. Now, this is from, I say today, it's not today anymore. This is Lisa Jackson, who is two administrators back of the EPA. She was in charge of the EPA when the Deepwater Horizon oil well blew up. And she left her job after getting sideways with British Petroleum over using Corexit 9500A as a dispersant, because there was no data on what it did with people, just what it does to oil. And she didn't want them to do it, and they said, well, we're in charge of this operation, and we're going to do it. And they did. And it's interesting. You should look that up and read about it. There was a lot of controversy, but none of it really was that public. But she, you know, had a different idea of environmental justice than the person who left his post last week, needless to say. The idea of opening up the regulatory conversation to new voices, giving all communities a seat at the decision-making table. That is truly anathema to the EPA we have right now. This is a new definition, once again by Robert Bullard, of what environmental justice means at the juncture we're at this point. I think it's a better definition than the legalistic one that the government originally used. All people have a right to be protected from environmental degradation. Prevention is how you do it. You don't wait until something harms people and then try and redress it. You make sure you don't harm people by using the precautionary principle, which just means don't put something on the market or use the product that you haven't tested, that you aren't sure it's safe. Don't just do a longitudinal study with the whole country with new chemicals and see what happens. Wait until you know. And this is a European idea. It's not something that originated in the U.S. And EJ now shifts the burden of proof to polluters. They have to prove they're not polluting. They have to prove they're giving equal protection. And the last one, EJ would actually redress disproportionate impacts. Disproportionate being if you live in Port Arthur or you live in Texas City or you live in Manchester over in Houston, you're getting all of it whereas if you live in River Oaks, and luckily if you live in Galveston, we get very little of that, except when the wind shifts in the winter. In the winter it smells different, and that's why. Now, this is the important part, how you could get involved if you wanted to work with a community like this. I have four or five communities, six actually, that I've worked with and still do. Manchester and Houston, which is right next to a monster Valero plant. The Fifth Ward, which is has mostly the problem of hazardous waste being stashed or buried, and it's quite widespread throughout the Fifth Ward. Corpus Christi has a refinery row with a giant Citgo refinery and a neighborhood living next to it. West Port Arthur, which we've been talking about, and that Grand Bois, Louisiana. I worked over there with the United Home and Nation, and that is a receptacle for waste from the oil industry, basically, from their production and exploration efforts. And the place smells horrible, and there's a community of Indians living there, and they have a lot of respiratory problems. East Baton Rouge, Louisiana, there's a big Exxon plant there, which has been a problem with emissions for a long time. Kelly Air Force Base, which is now the Kelly Field Annex over in San Antonio. And the groups, Tejas, Citizens for Environmental Justice, Community Empower and Development Association, the United Home and Nation, the Louisiana Environmental Action Network, and the Southwest Workers Union are all extremely good at what they do with practically no resources. So if in fact you wanted to donate money to any of those groups, they would use it well. Number two, engage with your local regional regulators. The TCEQ, that's local. The EPA is regional. And the county, they're not really a regulator, but they do enforcement things. And engage with them and find out what's going on. You have to actually make the effort, though, to do it. They don't really publicize these things very much. It's become even less transparent since we changed government. Number three is engaging, this is a hard one, with your state, congressional, Senate representatives, and industry groups. These people will not want to hear anything you have to say if you're criticizing how the regulatory climate is shaping up right now. But they need to hear it. They need to hear that everybody's not okay with it, because you lose sight of, the prize if you forget, because things look so bleak, that you got to keep engagement. You got to stay with these people. And then this is a hard one, because you have to do some self-education, but attend rulemaking sessions. They have listening sessions, they have public meetings that the EPA is required to produce. They're usually in Houston, if they pertain to this area. And they talk about changing the regulatory climate. They talk about how we're going to regulate these hazardous emissions in the future. And they're going in the other direction right now. They used to be making it tighter and more difficult for the companies to just emit and release at will. And they said, this costs us too much money. We need a little bit of abatement on our own, or we may have to consider moving our operations to a more business-friendly climate. This is used a lot as a rationale for asking for grace from the government on the part of the industry. The EPA is always having meetings. The one you should really go to is NEJAC. That's the National Environmental Justice Advisory Council, and they meet a couple of times a year, and the these are people that are doing community work that advise the government. Now, once again, that advice was taken more or less seriously in the past than it is now. But that doesn't mean they don't hear it. They need to keep hearing that things are not okay. And this is, I just put this in, this is where I grew up, in Oil City, Pennsylvania. This is the world's oldest producing oil well. It puts out about a quarter of a barrel a week. But they keep it going just so they can say they got that well. And this, I grew up in a community that was a company town for Pennzoil, Volstead, and Quaker State. And we had, in our small Catholic high school, we would have two or three cases of bone marrow blood cancer per year. In our, you know, like that'd be 12 in the school with 200 some students. So, I mean, it was off the chart in terms of epidemiology, but this is before there was an EPA. I'm an old guy. So nobody knew what an effect screening level was. Nobody knew. Nobody really looked into it except the industries. They already knew this. They've been doing science on their own problems for a long time because they need to know what their liability will be when it finally comes out. And so none of us knew it, but we knew there was something wrong with the air because it smelled like the inside of a refinery all over our valley. And we had a lot of health problems. So anyway, I just wanted to put that up there. Has anybody got any questions? And I'm sorry I was standing in front of that.
I noticed when you showed that list of chemicals, two of them were sulfur dioxide and oxides of nitrogen. Doesn't that lead to acid rain?
Oh, yeah, it can, yes. I mean, we don't really have that problem here, though, because the amounts aren't what you need to make that. I'm thinking more of ozone, though, with nitrogen oxide and all that other stuff, the highly reactive stuff. That makes a lot of ozone. And we have ozone action days all the time in Houston. Not here, though. But in Houston, Port Arthur, Beaumont, San Antonio, Dallas, Fort Worth. In April, we had 8 of them. I mean, that's just pretty off the chart.
How did we get copy of everything you just said?
I could just, if you give me your computer or give me, if you give me a thumb drive, I can make it for you right now. I have it on my computer.
So I know we're all a little bit implicated in this, and we all use petroleum and all the chemical products, and there's going to be like two factors to this. There's the environmental degradation, which I know as a religious community we oppose for itself because we care about plants and animals and the Mother Earth, etc. But is there for the immediate effects of the people like in West Port Arthur, is there a way that the companies could be compelled to maybe buy out some of the housing to get a bunker around? Like, because I mean, a lot of times you think, well, these people just move, but then you think about, well, what if I just moved? Well, I have a house, and how could I sell my house? It's a pretty steep value because of pollution. Are there any dealers?
Well, actually, Valero and the Manchester neighborhood in Houston have been in negotiation for a long time about a just buyout. But that's the issue, a just buyout. If you get market value for a house in Manchester, you can't buy a house anywhere else in Houston with that money. And these folks own these houses. And they've been in their family for a long time. And they were bought before they had any concept of this kind of stuff. All you can do is stay engaged with, say, an industry group, the East End Council over in Houston. You can go to their meetings and say, this is bothering me, and bring more people and sign petitions just so they know people know. Because most people don't even know this. It's out of sight, out of mind. It's not because people are like injustice. They just don't see it. They don't even know.
Did it smell like rotten eggs?
Yes.
That's hydrogen sulfur.
Hydrogen. Yeah. Well, and she and her hose were just no, they were just stripped. I mean, they were like it was. And she wasn't the only one. And I thought, my gosh, this was happening way back then.
It was a lot worse then.
It was a lot worse back in the day. And, you know, if you go back beyond the EPA's inception, it was very bad. You were getting an industrial exposure in your house, you know, if you were really close. It's not like that anymore.
I've heard that in Deer Park, Texas, that if you live or work in Deer Park, Texas, the effect that has on your lungs with all the chemical industry, that it's like smoking two-pack cigarettes a day.
I don't know how that translates, but Deer Park has the highest ever registered ozone reading in the United States. I mean, it was a few years back, but, you know, it was way off the chart. And if you have any kind of asthma or respiratory problem to start with, that's a huge trigger. And that's why they have those different color days. If you're a red day or a purple day, you shouldn't be outside if you have those problems.
One more question.
This is all fantastic, but there's people out there. They can't live like that. So the only solution is that they get better health care, that is, so certain factors are eliminated.
They do. I mean, usually they do. They don't always, and some of them do move. Some of them take a big economic hit when they move, but they do it because it's better for their health and their family's health. But I'm just saying, if you want to help them out, get engaged with the process that regulates that stuff. And, you know, the more they see people who aren't from that community coming, it really makes them be aware, take notice, and listen to what you're saying. I don't expect much movement out of the EPA for the next, hopefully just 2 years. But even then, I wonder. And once you start taking away regulations, it's really hard to put them back. And they've taken away quite a few already. But we got to get back into the climate justice process, which we left. We need to get back into that too. And you have the ability and the numbers to put your name on paper and at least with a petition, make it known that you don't agree with what's going on. That's the best we can do right now. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.